Welcome to Cultimatum, the podcast uncovering the dark realities of cults and human trafficking. I'm your host, Anonymous Andrew, and each week we dive deep into the manipulation, control, and courageous escapes that define these worlds.
And I'm Melody, Andrew's co-host. Having experienced the depth of a cult firsthand, specifically the House of Yahweh, I am here as an advocate for fellow survivors.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests are their own and do not reflect the official policy or position of Cultimatum or its affiliates. The content discussed on this podcast are based on personal experiences and should not be construed as factual or legal advice. Neither the host nor the guest are liable for any statements made during the episodes. Listeners are encouraged to conduct their own research and seek professional advice where appropriate.
And before we dive into today's episode, we want to issue a trigger warning. Some episodes may cover explicit and potentially disturbing subjects such as sexual abuse, rape, human trafficking, suicide, and other sensitive subjects. Listener discretion is advised. Hey, Cultimatum fans, before we dive into today's episode, we need a tiny favor from each of you.
That's right. If you love what you hear, please take a moment to rate and review us on Apple and Spotify.
Your support helps us to reach new listeners and bring more awareness and attention to these important topics.
So tap that star rating, drop a quick review, and help us spread the word. It really does make a difference.
Thank you so much for tuning in and for your amazing support. We truly appreciate each and every one of you. Now let's get started with the show.
Here we go. Welcome to Cultimatum Podcast, the culture of cults and human trafficking. And my name is Anonymous Andrew. And with me tonight is my co-host Melody. Hello, Melody.
Hello, Andrew. We have an incredibly powerful and deeply personal episode today. Our guest, Alisa Flores, spent 46 years inside the cult of La Luz del Mundo, a group that dedicated every aspect of her life, her thoughts, her choices, and even her suffering. Only 4 years ago, she found the strength to walk away, and now she's here to share her story with us. Alisa speaks out about the ways that La Luz del Mundo systematically silenced women, stripping them of their voices and their opportunities and options. Under the guise of religious doctrine, they were told to bear their cross no matter the abuse, no matter the pain. She is now breaking the silence not only on social media, but here on Cultimatum as well. Alisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, welcome.
My name is Alisa Flores. I was born and raised in a high-control religious group called La Luz del Mundo. And like the host said, it is very, very man. The men controlled everything. They controlled everything from your house. I would say ministers themselves controlled everything, controlled your whole life. They controlled everything because in La Luz del Mundo, there is an apostle. And the first apostle was named Aaron. Well, his name was Eusebio Joaquin, and he changed it to Aaron. This cult has 96 years in the making, so it's been around almost over 100 years. I was born and raised in this, and I was in for 46 years of my life, and my life was dedicated to this church. I woke up, I breathed, I slept, and I was a proud member of La Luz del Mundo for all of this time. Until, I would say, and when I was 46 years old, well, when I was 45, the leader of the cult was arrested for sexual crimes to minors. It's during this time I was in the temple and they bring down a monitor and they tell us that the bishops get up and they say that they are going to be our only means of communication, that we should not look at anything that is being said on the news, anything that is being on the internet or anything like that. And so I obeyed. I did what I was told because the blessing is in the obedience. Big popular saying in this. If we did, the bishops told us that if we did go look this, that this could affect our faith. And if our faith is affected, then we're going to go to hell and we need to worry about our children and our family and everybody else. So they were going to be our only means of communication. So that was it. And during this time in 2019, when he was arrested, the following year, COVID hits, and they closed the churches down. And when they closed the churches down, we're still obligated. Now, en la luz del mundo, you go to church 3 times a day. You have a 5 a.m. church, you have a 9 a.m. church, and you have a 6:30. If you can make all three, well, that's your blessing that you gave God your tithe for the day, because there is 24 hours in a day. So the 5 a.m. church was usually 30 minutes. Then the 9 a.m. and the 6:30 or 7 was 1 hour. So you're giving God your 24-hour tithe by going 2 hours and a half to worship him, to the temples. So that's your tithe to God for the day. And also that includes a lot of the brainwashing that they do for to you. So during the pandemic, they closed the temples down, but you're still obligated to watch the because they transmitted it on YouTube. So we were still required at our house to prepare a little area as if it was a temple with a pulpit type area. And then you have your chairs and you set your chairs up. Because in La Luz del Mundo, the men sit on one side and women sit on the other side. So you had your chairs for your boys or the men of the house, and then you have your chairs for the women of the house. So you had to set up a room in your house as if you were in the temple. And so you're following the service just as if you were in there, because the Spirit of God is coming through the whatever you're watching, and he's going to watch you and he's listening to you and all that stuff. So you are basically in the temple of your house. Your house became the temple of God because we didn't have the temples. They were closed. So during this time of the pandemic, we still had to be listening and doing all the things as if we normally did. The 5 a.m. church was still there. The 9:30 a.m. was still there. And the 6:30 or 7 o'clock was still there. And then after that, we still had to jump onto a Zoom and have a consecration for the apostle that was in prison. Now, I will tell you when he...
Wait. You prayed for the man that got arrested for abusing people or children. You prayed for him?
Yes, we did. Now, in La Luz del Mundo, when you have, let's say, a normal prayer, and I'm going to tell you how this prayer consecration and all of this, how the service goes down. And this is for every single time you go in. You walk in to the temple. Now, women have to wear veils, and we have to dress a certain way. You have to wear a long skirt. Dress very modest. You had to wear a veil. And actually, I have some veils here still that I haven't gotten rid of. I use some on my TikToks and stuff like that, making fun of it. But you had to, women, part of their salvation was to wear this veil. Because even if you died there in your funeral, even my mom, when she passed, we put a veil on her head in her coffin. Because it was part of the woman's salvation. We couldn't be saved because it was part of our salvation, because we couldn't worship God if we didn't have this veil on, a woman. You could not pray. You could not sing. You could not enter to the temple without this veil. So it's actually part of your salvation. So you walk into the temple. You have your veil on as you walk in. You kneel down and you ask God to forgive you for any sins that you may have committed during your time that you weren't in the temple or worshiping him, because even with a thought, you can offend God. So you ask God for forgiveness. Then the service starts. Then the person that is talking, in the 5 a.m. and in the 6:30, it's only men that are allowed to talk. And the 9:30 is women, because most of the time men are at work. So now it's women that will talk. So at every single prayer, this is the way it goes down. The person gets up. The first thing you do is another prayer to prepare yourself to glorify God, prepare, ask God to open your mouth, to give you the liberty to glorify his name and to sing to him. Then after we do that, we sing a song, and it's usually a song of election. And when I say election, is the election of the apostle of God. So there are specific songs that are written in honor. That's what they say, in honor of the apostle. So these songs are sung during this first song that we sing. After we sing the song, we listen to a psalm, or a psalm, that's how it says in English, a psalm. And after the psalm, the psalm is to prepare us for God to give us words to pray for the apostle of God. And so we pray only for the apostle of God in that one. Then the next then we get up, we do another song, and then we pray for the Apostle of God's family and for the ministers. And we also pray towards the end of that prayer, we pray for God to open our minds and our understanding to receive the word of God that's going to be coming, and also to use the vessel that God is putting up there to give us the word of God, so that God use him and for God to open our hearts to receive what needs to be told to us. So after that, it's a 30-minute talk that they do. Did you have a question?
I do have a quick question. By any chance, did some of those things change the way the order of the prayers and who you were praying to? Did that change in the 46 years that you were going there? Did that evolve?
Yes. Well, the thing is that at the beginning, we had a different apostle. When I was not born, when Aaron was around, but that when Aaron was the apostle, because there's three apostles. When Aaron was around, which was the first one, the founder and all that, that prayer was specifically for him. When he passes away, then it's his son, Samuel. And Samuel, when I was born, Samuel was the apostle during that time. And I would always pray for Samuel. When he passes, then Nathan Joaquin Garcia is the new apostle, which is the grandson to the one who founded the church La Luz del Mundo, or the Light of the World. So then the prayer changed from being for each apostle according to whoever's time it was. But the prayer sequence stays the same. That didn't change at all.
Okay.
The only thing that changes is when after we do the talk or we hear the explanation that the member gives, because let me explain to you, on Sundays, the minister gets up and does the talk and gives the topic. Let's say they talk about faith. The service at 5 o'clock starting that day will be about faith. And throughout the whole week, 3 times a day, everybody is talking about that same topic, using different scriptures, and you study a lot, and everybody takes notes on Sundays so that you know what the topic is. And if there's a subtopic, you also know what it is. And so everybody is there writing. And if you look at any videos of La Luz del Mundo, you'll see everybody has tablets, because you're taught to write down, to take notes all the time. You're always taking notes of whatever is being talked about.
When you say tablets, you mean literally like iPads?
Yeah, there's some people have tablets, but I'm talking about like most of the time when I was younger, it was written.
Okay.
And so like you have your tablet and your pen and paper and you're writing down. But if you look at any pictures of La Luz del Mundo during that they're having a talk, everybody's writing. Everybody's writing. You're writing whatever you feel is important about the topic that he's talking about. And then also scriptures and stuff from the scriptures that kind of pop out at you, because you might have to take the prayer as well. And you have to be prepared. So you're always taking notes. So,
okay. In this short 10 minutes that you have explained everything you have explained, I have 7 questions already. So,
okay. Okay.
You said you went to church 3 times a day. So the 5 a.m., the 9, and the 6:30, I think, something like that.
Yes, yes.
So that was the time that you devoted to God, that was your tithe in the 24-hour period. What did you do in between? So from 5 in the morning to 9, did you volunteer? Did you help?
So I'm going to tell you, as a child, if I got up to go to the 5 a.m., because the children aren't forced to go, but if we did get up, our father would reward us and take us to go eat donuts. So we wanted to get up like on the weekends to go to the 5 a.m. because we wanted the donuts, right? Because that would be our reward.
So you're rewarded. Okay.
We're rewarded. And my father rewarded us. I don't know if everybody's rewarded, but that's what my father did to us. And then you clean, you do your regular chores. I'm talking about on a weekend or a summer or whatever. As a child, let's say in the summertime, we did the 9 a.m. church. We went to the 5 a.m. and then we went to the 9 a.m. And then after the 9 a.m., we went home, and we were still little, and we would play church because that's all we knew. That was our whole life. We played church when we got home. We would fix our chairs how we were. My brother would get up and he would talk. We would get up and sing, just like if we were in church, because that's all we knew. We didn't know how to play like regular kids. We knew church. And our whole life was consumed that as a child. Even when we went swimming, we were baptizing each other, because that's how we played, because that's all we knew.
And that makes total sense, because when I was growing up, and any other, of course, you were in Mexico at this time, right?
No, I was born and raised here in Houston, Texas.
Oh, okay. That's right. They have a big following in Texas. When I was growing up, we would watch John Wayne movies or cowboys and Indian movies. And all I knew was to go out and play cops and robbers or cowboys and Indians. So it would make sense that if that's all you knew, you're in this bubble and you're being bombarded with church. So you're going to act it out as children. It makes sense. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's what we did. We mimicked them. But as we got older, as I got older, let's say into teenage years, I would get up, go to church, sometimes I had to do the 9 a.m. prayer because we started that as children at 9, 10, 12. You were already taking 9 a.m. prayers. You were already doing either you would do the word or you would do the consecration. You were always an active member of this church. Then after that, if it was an event where you had to go sell during times that we would sell, we did that. We sold plates. We sold candies. We sold flowers. We sold piñatas. We sold Easter eggs. Whatever had to be done was done. And whatever had to be done with the church was a priority at all time. If the minister calls at whatever time, it was 2 o'clock in the morning that he needed us there, we were going. We were there because that was our salvation, the blessing to obey was our salvation. So at any time they called, we had to be there at the beck and call. We always had to be there to serve or whatever they needed us to do.
Okay. So during COVID, when COVID hit, you said that when you were home, that home became an extension of the church. So they had Zoom meetings. Let me ask you a question. Did everybody have the means to do Zoom? Because you're in Texas. So I'm assuming you had some money or you were in the United States, but the Luz del Mundo is based in Mexico, no?
Right, right.
So
yes.
There's a lot of poor people in Mexico.
Well, let me explain something real quick. When you are in the church, your church is divided up. And let's say if I am in Houston by itself, they have 21 chapters or 21 temples. Every temple has their minister. And so you are going to get onto the Zoom with your minister of your church. And so the Zoom that you get onto is with your minister. And a lot of times I would just Zoom from my cell phone. So as long as you had internet, you have the capability to Zoom. And everybody did. Like, we did that.
Okay. So that makes sense. And you might not know the answer to this because you weren't in Mexico. But in Mexico, they must have shut down the churches. How did I've been to Mexico. And I know the poverty that's down there. And not everybody had cell phones probably back in 2018, 17. And when COVID hit, 2019, 2020, or the beginnings of it, did they have the means to do that in Mexico or you don't know the answer to that?
I really don't know about that because I was there during that time, you know, during that we were over here and we were just supposed to. I want to explain something real quick. The ministers that La Luz del Mundo have no official training. They don't go to any schools or anything like that. They are a lot of times they are members that are on the seats. We call them las bancas. They're on the seats and they're called to be servers. They're called to be in the ministry body or whatever. They're called to do that. Like they say, okay, you know what? You want to sign up or you can sign up to do it as well. But they don't send you to any school. They do their own teaching amongst them. So you don't know that there's other religions or anything like that. You do know because they teach you to defend your belief. They teach you how to defend if a Jehovah's Witness comes and talks to you. They teach you how to defend against a Catholic and stuff like that, according to their beliefs. Now, so they have no formal training at all, no college or anything like that. Yet we are taught that they're sent to us by the apostle of God who has the authority of God. And so these ministers that are coming, they are our teachers. They are our parents. They are the apostle representation. They are your doctors. They are your police. They are your counselors. And they have no official training at all. So but when you go to them,
you don't question that either, right? Because
you are not allowed to question because if you question, then you're doubting your faith.
Right.
And no, and if you're doubting your faith, then you're doubting God. And well, no, if you're doubting your faith, then you're doubting the election that the apostle has from God, because now you're questioning God because you're questioning. It's a whole guilt trip.
Yeah.
Oh, from
yeah.
the top to the bottom.
Brainwashing. It's the indoctrination and the brain. Yeah.
Yeah. Like
it's horrible.
Definitely. It's definitely a brain. The deprogram is so much. It's like you have a lot of, I have a lot of deprogramming, but regardless,
we're going to get to that. We're going to get to that. Because I'm very interested.
Regardless.
This leads right into my question, which is when and how did you actually start to wake up? Did you catch a glimpse of the real news, or what happened? How did you wake up from all this?
Okay. So what happened was, remember, COVID hits. And when COVID hits, we're not actually going to the temples. But I do need to mention that the minister, when you go to La Luz del Mundo, or when you're a member, when you go to church, they take attendance. Your attendance, like if you're in school, right? If you did the morning, whatever. And if you miss a day or two, they're calling you, say, hey, is anything wrong? You weren't at church today. So they're like on you all the time. It's a big control. So when COVID hits, we're no longer going to the temple, but we still have to get on to these Zoom consecrations to pray for the apostle and his freedom and all this stuff. But they always have a big New Year's thing and a big event. So my brother says, hey, Elisa, why don't you come over here and we can celebrate New Year's with me? And I was like, yeah, okay, I could go watch the transmission over there with you and it won't be a problem. But let me explain something else too. In La Luz del Mundo, for you to travel, you have to ask permission from the ministers so that you can go. You can't just go somewhere and they not know where you are, because if you have a car accident and you didn't ask for permission, then you go to hell because you didn't have permission to go wherever you're going.
Wow.
And if you go somewhere, normally they gave you a letter. And that letter you go give to the other minister, and then they'll put you to do something for the church or whatever. During, even if you're on vacation for a day or two and you're just visiting your siblings, you still have to take a letter. And it gives, in that letter, it gives, like, if you're an active member, if you give your offerings, if you're all this kind of stuff.
It sounds like they had very, very tight reins on you. Very, very strict. They wanted to know where you were at all times.
At all times.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Even, let's say, even to have a surgery, I had to cyst on my ovaries. And so I had to have a surgery. And because of the cyst that I had, I was going to have my tubes burned and snipped so that I wouldn't continue to have these. I had to have permission from my minister to get this. And I had to get the permission from the minister for me to be able to have this surgery. So yes, they control everything. Every aspect of your life is controlled.
In your experience, so I'm sorry that happened to you, but it probably happened to other people. Maybe not what happened to you, but other people may have gotten appendicitis. Maybe they had tonsillitis. Maybe they had some more severe, maybe cardiac, some of the older elders. What was, they all had to get permission? What happens if there was an emergency? And
Well, you before you go or 911's called or whatever, you still call your minister and you let them know, hey.
Wow.
My husband is sick. We're going to have to take him to the hospital or whatever. And then they will ask the church to pray for you during that time. But if you don't do it, you do not get a prayer. They will not pray for you if you don't advise or let them know that this is a situation, so you don't get that prayer. And then when you're in there having this procedure or whatever, they will pray for you as long as you ask for permission to have these procedures done.
Okay. I'm very good at picking up little words that are dropped in without. So you mentioned the word husband. Did you get married while you were there?
Yes, I did. I was 18 years old and I was told that I needed to marry this person. And so I was forced to marry at that age to a person that was not a person that I knew or whatever. He was actually a boyfriend to somebody else, but I was told I needed to get married with him. And you don't question. You obey because that's what you're taught to do. Like you don't, in this day, you don't talk back to your ministers. You don't, because if you do, you're talking back to the apostle. If your father tells you something, you do it, because if not, he's coming from, you know, your father is above, you know, above you. And then above him is the ministers and then it's the apostles. So if he's coming to you and telling you the minister said you got to get married, then you go get married because that's what they're told. So I was in this relationship with a person for 13 years, and he cheated and had all this thing, all this other, had kids in between my kids. But I couldn't leave him because the minister told us, or told me when I went to him and said, and he was not just that, he was verbally, physically, emotionally, financially abusive to me. And when I would go and talk to the minister, because he's my therapist, he's my counselor, he's everything, he would say, well, you know, this is the sacrifice that God wants you to go through. This is your cross.
That's just bull crap.
Also, another comment that was famously said, oh, well, Jesus was slashed. He had hit 30 times. What is a few hits or bruises, slaps or whatever?
They compared you to the pain that Jesus went through on the cross. Oh my
women,
God.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this was my cross. And then if I tried to leave him, because I did try to leave him several times, then my kids would not be saved. So they use that.
Of course.
You know, your children are your most precious things. And what are they doing? They're manipulating the situation, because if you leave, then they lose that financial benefit.
Of
That's
course.
What it is.
Yeah.
That's what it is. And so if one gets out, oh my God, you know. So
well, and then they also lose the future members, meaning your children. They're losing the next generation too. And they've already invested in brainwashing them, so they don't want to lose them.
And Melody, this is what I have been over and over and over again over the last, I don't know, 20 episodes, that I know that cults want their members to breed to bring on new members. And I brought that up a couple of times, but there were a couple of cults that said, no, we didn't, they weren't procreating for that reason. But here in the Luther Mundo, apparently that's the case.
Oh, yes. Like, I had 5 kids. And let me tell you all this. When I got permission to finally get a divorce, because I got a divorce because my husband took off with another woman. So I finally get permission. But that was a whole nother thing, because for me to be able to get this permission, the minister had to see him with the other woman, because he couldn't just take my word or take the word of the person that was cheating, of the husband that was being cheated on as well. They couldn't take our words. They had to see it with their own eyes for me to get permission. And then after I get permission, the minister says, okay, now we're going to give you your letter of liberty, because you can't just get divorced. You have to have a letter of liberty for you to be able to go get married again. But you have to wait 7 years for you to be able to get remarried again. So you can't just go get remarried. You have a letter of liberty, but after 7 years. And the minister tells me, you know, I don't know who's going to want to be with you, because you have 5 kids already and you cannot give them more children. So go to Mexico and find somebody. Take this letter, go over there and find somebody to marry. And I'm like, my kids don't even really speak Spanish. I'm not going to go get a Mexican. Well, you could go get a brother and fix their papers. And I'm like, I'm not doing that. But that's what they wanted. And that's what they recommend women to do. Go to Mexico and find you somebody. And I'm like, what am I going to look like going and looking for a man? I'm not going
to
do that.
Well, and that was another way to get them, I guess, some Mexicans to come over the border and you marry him. And now he becomes a citizen.
He becomes a citizen. And then now he has more money, because then that person's going to work, and also more money comes into the church. So, yeah.
And somebody in your house to keep you under control.
Definitely. Well, I will tell you this. In La Luz del Mundo, the one that there is a lot of domestic violence. And I speak about this a lot because I'm a domestic violence advocate here in my area.
Good.
But, and I do this because of all of the things that I went through. There's so much domestic violence in La Luz del Mundo, and I will explain to you why. Because in La Luz del Mundo, the minister is the one that's above everything, right? So when you have an issue or whatever, even where you're going to live, if you want to go buy a house, you go as a couple and say, hey, we want the blessing to buy a house or whatever. You go buy a house, right? But who is the one that gave you the permission? Because you have to ask permission. It's the minister. If you have a problem with your wife, you go to the minister. If you have a problem with your children, you go to the minister. So who's running the house?
The minister.
The church is running the house. So now you have a man that is not running the house because somebody else is controlling him. So what can he control? Well, I can push this girl around. I could push my children around. So that's why there's so much violence in domestic violence, because domestic violence is not just violence towards a woman. It's domestic violence is violence in the domicile, in the house, which includes children. So any violence in the house can be considered domestic violence. So in La Luz del Mundo, there is a lot of that, because the man that is supposed to have this leadership in the house is not really being the leader, because the leader is the minister.
Yeah, he's stripped from the leadership. He's stripped of his power.
Of his manhood.
Thank you. His manhood. So he has to exert his manhood over you and the children and the house in general.
And then you go and tell the minister that he's doing that. And the minister, instead of correcting the issue or telling you, hey, call the police if he does this again, this is your cross.
You will cross the bear. Oh, my God.
This is your cross. If God didn't... No, how about this? Pray to God to help you not make him mad anymore.
Oh, my God. Jeez.
What did you do to get him to the point where he had to hit you?
Right. It's your fault.
Yes. The blame is always back to the victim. So they victim chain you. And so now you're feeling guilty and you're asking God to help you and to give you the patience so that you don't make your husband upset. And so your self-esteem...
You're walking on eggshells.
All the time.
Yeah.
You are always on eggshells. But let me go back to tell y'all how I got out.
Please. I can't wait. Because we hear this a lot, that when COVID hit, many, 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 many ex-cult members got out of all their cults right around COVID. So I would love to hear the story. Yeah.
And that was the same for me. So when COVID hit and we were listening to the prayers and my brother invites me to go over there to Dallas for New Year's, I'm like, okay, you know what? I'll go watch the service over there. So I go over there. And when I'm there, my brother starts asking me, hey, Elisa, what do you think about this, about the apostle being in jail? And I'm like, it's nothing. It's probably an immigration thing, because he travels all over the world. He tours. So it's probably an immigration thing. And he looks at me and goes, Elisa, for real? You haven't seen what's going on? And I'm like, Moses, I'm not going to affect my faith like that. I believe in what I believe. And God has put that faith in me that he is a man of God and all this bull crap, you know, that you're taught and you're brainwashed to say. And then he goes, Elisa, it's about sexual things. And I'm like, wait, what? I was like, no, because you're taught also in La Luz del Mundo that bad conversations corrupt the good customs. So when somebody starts wanting to talk bad to the apostle, you stop the conversation, you leave or whatever. But I'm in his house 4 hours away from where I live. How can I do that? So you're also taught that in your mind, you start glorifying God, and you're like, and you rebuke the bad spirit, because if somebody's talking to you bad about the apostle, it's a bad spirit. So you're in my head. Why my brother's talking to me, I'm not really listening to him, because in my mind, I'm saying, in the name of Jesus Christ, I rebuke you. In the name of Jesus Christ, I rebuke you. And I'm like, Gloria Cristo, Gloria Cristo, Gloria Cristo in my head, because that's what I'm taught to do. So I'm doing this while he's saying all these things or whatever. But then he says, Elisa, let me ask you a question. So I have to stop doing that, because I'm going to have to answer this question. So he says, do you remember when the apostle of God, before he got arrested, he told us to pray for all the first responders, for the police, for the government, for the president, for the mayors, and all of these attorney generals and everything like that, because God put them in those places to keep us safe. Yeah. And we used to do that prayer, right? Yeah. And he goes, why don't we do that anymore? It was done so smooth. It was done so smooth that I didn't even notice that it wasn't being done anymore. Like, because it was all about the focus that, oh my God, the apostle, and we need to keep praying because of the apostles and where he's at and this and that for him to be released. I didn't even notice, because now they went from we're doing this to we're praying for them. Now all we were told is that they're corrupt. And right. I didn't notice the change because I was so involved in the apostle of God. And yes, the devil is attacking us. That's what we were told a lot.
Because they fed you that information. They didn't want you to know the real truth, but your brother knew the real truth.
And see, I did not know that he was looking at those things, because if I would have known, I would have never went to visit him.
Would you have reported him?
No. We didn't report him. We just, in La Luz del Mundo, if you get out, you are now cancer. You are Ebola. You are all these sick things, and you have to cut out the cancer. You have to cut out the Ebola. So if somebody leaves the faith, you no longer have conversation or communication with them. So I lost 5 siblings because of this. I lost all of my uncles, most of the ones that were in church, all out.
So they left before you because they saw the truth. And they were trying to...
Three of my siblings were out, and 5 and 6 of us were still in, because I come from a family of 9.
Wow.
6 of us were still in, and 3 were out. But this one brother that I went to visit, actually, 2 of them, I didn't know they were out of the 3. I knew one was out, but I didn't know the other 2 were out. So when I go visit my brother and he starts telling me these things, in my mind, I'm like rebuking this bad spirit and Gloria Cristo and in the name of Jesus Christ, I rebuke you as I'm told to do. And then he tells me, Elisa, do you remember when the apostle of God told us all to go, that the internet was good, that we use it to do things like we're going to use it to go and give the word of God in other places? So we needed to go into the internet and learn to speak different languages, speak a different language. And so we were he told us that, and he told us that knowledge is power. And he says, but now they're trying to take your power away by not letting you go in there and read what's being said, what's going on. Because when he tells me there's sexual things, I'm like, no, that can't be. That is not true. This is the apostle of God. So, no way.
At what point did you start to... So here you are rebuking him in your head, but I'm guessing at some point he kept chipping away at you.
Well, when he says that about the knowledge is power, I thought, wait a minute, that's true. Because we were told to do that, and now we're told... we can't do it. But then I say, well, that would affect my health, so I'm not going to do it. But my brother says, you know what, Elisa? Because I told him, I don't want to continue to have this conversation, Moses. I'm just going to get up and move and go somewhere else or whatever. And he goes, okay, that's fine, Elisa. We'll stop the conversation. But I'm going to send you some stuff and some videos and stuff of the court proceedings and everything like that. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. And he sends them to me throughout, a few days. And I'm like, if I'm guided to see them, I will. But if not, oh well. But he had already planted the seed of doubt because he told me, why are they taking away your power?
What he had done now, was he very, very methodically got you to think critically, got you to think outside that box. Yes, he got you to think outside the bubble.
I was just going to say, he planted the seed of critical thinking.
Exactly. He planted that seed in me. And then when I come back to my house, because I didn't listen to anything or whatever, and I'm just like, she's sending me stuff. And I was like, you know what? Let me just click on one. And so I click on one. And on there, this is a court proceeding. On there, a detective is talking in behalf of a Jane Doe, and he's talking about how this young girl brings a drink, a coffee to the apostle. And when he's doing that, and when she's doing that, he puts his hands into her panties. And I was like, oh my God, what? I have a nonprofit organization called A Birthday to Remember. And I work with a foster facility here in my area. And I do birthday parties for kids that are in this foster facility. And the majority of them are in there for sexual assault. How am I going to be connected to a person who
defend somebody who's doing that you're trying to undo?
Okay, so exactly. But a big thing was what happened to me is that when I was younger, I was in La Casa Grande, meaning around the apostle of God, Samuel, when there was an accident in Houston. And I was in those houses, and I didn't understand some of the blessings that I had to be called out at 2 o'clock in the morning to go serve. But when I went, they would dress us different. Like we were dressed in small little dresses and stuff like, and put makeup on, and they would do things to us that we normally weren't allowed to do. But we weren't allowed to tell anybody about it. And I was in the house, in La Casa Grande. So I was part of this little group of girls that were around when he came as a server or taking care of his house. I took care of one of his grandkids. And when I was there, and actually that one grandkid married Judith Castillo. So, yeah.
Okay.
So I know her.
A prior guest on our show for the listeners. Yeah.
Yes. So I took care of him when he was young. And so I was around them and the royal family, because we called them La Familia Real, the royal family. I was around that. And so I saw girls go into the room with Samuel. I saw things happen, but I never questioned. I was told to massage his feet. I was told to give a massage. I mean, in him naked, and he would tell me to like take clothes off or whatever. But I didn't know that those were not things, correct things to do, because I was told that everything and anything that he asked for was a blessing, and it was already approved by God. So the apostle of God, basically, he was my God. So if he asked for something of me, I was supposed to do it. So I didn't know that it was wrong to massage this man. Me being a child at 15 years old, 16 years old, I didn't know those things were wrong until when I got out and I'm speaking to a lawyer because I went to do some stuff. And they asked me, well, at 15 years old, were you certified to do this massage? And I'm like, no. Then it's a sexual thing that was happening and you didn't even know. And I'm like,
I have to ask, and I know it's a very personal question, but when you were doing this to him, you were massaging him, but was he doing anything to you?
No, he never touched me. He never touched me. I was just told to do things, but he never touched me. And I believe that he didn't do that because my family was from the United States or a U.S. We were all U.S. citizens. And the majority of the members from La Luz del Mundo were Mexicans, undocumented, or Salvadorians, things like that. But we were an American family, and there was not very many of them. And one time, my sister, we were in the study. She was in the studies, and one of them, a minister, had a child that was, I guess, autistic or kind of sick. And my sister was up talking, and he stood up and he picked up her shirt and exposed her breast. Well, my father got really mad and he made a big deal. He was going to fight with the minister. He was going to call and report to the authorities and all this. Well, ministers and bishops and everybody comes and calms my father down. They're like, no, they moved that minister somewhere else so that there would be no type of sadness to the apostle, and nobody could bring any type of like embarrassment to the church. So they move him away, but they knew that my father, if something happened, if I said something, although we were groomed to not talk about the blessings that happened in the royal house, I think that he never touched me because he knew that who my father was. But I had already been groomed prior to that event happening, so I was already in that circle. So he didn't touch me, but I had to touch him. And so he was still my God, and it was still my blessing. So when they would call, no matter whatever time, and I would tell my dad sometimes, oh, I don't feel like going. And he'd be like, it's the blessing for the house for you to be there. Get up right now. I'm about to drop you off. And they would drop me off like at 8 o'clock in the morning, and I would be there until 8, 9 o'clock at night. And they were not allowed to ask me what happened. What did I do? If I ate, if I drank, if I was okay, if I went anywhere, they didn't ask me. So I was not allowed to talk about what happened in the apostle's house, because the apostle always told us, if you talk about anything that happens in this house and your family gets out of church, then their salvation or their soul is lost, and it's going to be counted on you because you talk bad about the apostle. And you don't do that. And they give you the scripture about how in the Bible that Moses' siblings talk bad about him, and they weren't even finished talking and they got leprosy. Well, then, you know, those type of things are told to us. So we don't want our family members to get sick. We don't want our family. I don't want my father to die. I don't want my siblings or my brothers or anybody to go to hell.
They had real power over you.
Yes. I mean, it's when I think about it now, it's embarrassing. Now, before, I was such a proud member of La Luz del Mundo. Now, I'm embarrassed to say that I was in that belief, I was in that.
I have another question that I want to ask you, but I want to ask you. So we have about a little less than 15 minutes left. So let's jump to the part where you really decided that this was no longer for you, that your brother, you had seen enough of the trial. And when did you make the decision to leave?
So when I start looking at these things, I start remembering things that I had seen, because I didn't know that those were wrong. I saw the girls go into the room with the apostle. I saw the apostle's wife brush their hair when they were coming out. But it never dawned to me that it was anything wrong, because we were taught that it was the blessing of God, right? So when I start watching those things and listening to them, all of these memories start coming back to me about things that I saw and things that I experienced, things that I did. And then I was like, my whole life was a lie.
Lie. You started connecting the dots.
And you knew it was true. You knew it was true because you had seen it.
I knew exactly. So I knew what these girls were saying was true because it was something that I had seen, that I experienced. And then it was like, people were like, oh, these girls are lying or whatever. But these girls lost their family. They lost everything. And who's going to want to do that? Because I didn't do it. I didn't talk because I was afraid that if I said anything, that my family was going to get out of church and they were going to go to hell. So I knew what these girls were saying because I lived it. They were so brave and they talked about their experience because they were smarter than me. They weren't as brainwashed, I guess, because I was told that if I said anything bad about the apostle from the apostle himself, I was going to go to hell.
And let's not forget, you were born into it. Maybe some of them weren't born into it. Maybe they were. But if they had experienced firsthand sexual abuse or firsthand any kind of abuse, they were in the middle of it. You were still on the outside being told, don't pay attention to that. So, all right.
But let me explain something real quick.
Sure.
My mom got baptized when she was 4 months pregnant with me. My mom started doing paperwork for the apostle because she was an American and he told her to go get notary, and she became a notary and she started doing work for him. So she was 4 months pregnant when she got baptized. The apostle comes to my mom and tells her, if you have a girl, you name her Elisa Flores. So when I'm born, and Elisa Flores is the mother or is the wife to the person, which is Aaron Joaquin, which is the founder to the church.
We've heard that name, yeah.
So the Apostle Samuel names me Elisa Flores, and I am taught from birth that I belong to him. My whole life is dedicated to him. So whatever he says, I'm supposed to do because he named me. He allowed me to come. They didn't know if I was going to be a boy or a girl, but the apostles of God said I was going to be a girl, and he named me Elisa Flores. So okay. I am named by him as his wife, you know, like his mother.
Yeah.
In other words.
Okay. You early back in the beginning of our interview, you had said something about that you had to wear veils and that you kept some of them, and that you, I don't remember the exact wording you used, but you said that you use, so you're on TikTok being an advocate and putting up videos against the Luluz del Mundo. And then you said something about use the veils to make fun of them.
Yes.
All right. So can you explain that?
Well, because like I was saying before, that the veil was part of my salvation, and I no longer believe that a veil is going to save me.
Okay.
So we did, there was an HBO documentary that came out called Unveiled. And in that, and they did a commercial for it. I would just say a commercial for it. But us members that got out, we also did one. We did a very powerful one where we got members and women to cut the veils. So we took our, I'm in that video, I'm at the beginning and I have a veil on. And then I take my veil off. And all these other people take their veils off, and then they show us cutting the veils.
Very cool.
We take the veils off because we are no longer in that belief. Right. We don't believe that this little thing is going to save us. Yes.
Very symbolic to your freedom.
Definitely. Yes.
Okay. So you got out. Walk us through your deconstruction process. So you've been out about 4 years now?
Yes. Now, I will tell you that I'm very fortunate that I work in mental health. And when I watched that video, I was able to go to one of the therapists that is there that also came from a very religious, high-controlling religious background. And I told her, I am lost. I don't know who I am. My identity was Elisa Flores, a proud member of La Luz del Mundo. And now I find this out. Who is Elisa? I don't even know what I like. I don't even know what I could do. Like, I was so lost. I had no identity because who was I supposed to be now?
Yeah, from 0 to 40 at that time, I'm guessing it was around 40.
I was 46.
Okay. So you didn't know anything about the outside world other than what maybe your brother showed you a little bit of. So
not really, no. My whole life.
You could date somebody, that you can go to the movies, that you could...
Now, I told you that we wore long skirts. Like, that was our dress for women, long skirt. We dressed modest. And still, I got out and I continued to wear those skirts. And I didn't have ears piercing because it's against the church to have ears pierced. So I didn't have ears pierced. But then when I got out, I started looking in the Bible. Where does it say that I can't wear pants? Where does it say that I can't have my ears pierced? And then I find in the Bible that God adorns his wife. He's talking about the people of Israel, and he talks about how he adorns her with a crown, a nose on her ring, and earrings. But then if I follow everything in the Bible, why am I not allowed to have earrings? But God adorns his bride with earrings. So it didn't make sense. Yeah. So I went and got my ears.
It didn't make any sense. It was contradictory. You know, yeah. Melody, I know Melody's story pretty well, and took her almost a decade and a half to deconstruct, to unlearn all of the
brainwashing
doctrine, the brainwashing that was so, I guess, to your point that you were in the mental health field, maybe that helped you a little bit.
Yes,
where are you today in your faith? And we know you have a TikTok channel and you're speaking out against the church. But where are you personally in your faith today?
Well, I'm a spiritual person. I believe that there is a creator. But I don't believe in the book that was written 2,000 years ago to manipulate humanity and suppress humanity and suppress women and to install fear. This book is a history book that people use to install fear.
Yeah, as a weapon. Yes.
It's used to install fear. And for every single little thing, if you are in a religious group, you're walking on eggshells. You can't live. Now, I would tell you, when I used to wake up in the morning, I would wake up and ask God to forgive me, because maybe in my dreams, I may have offended him in my dream, because that's what I was taught. But now I wake up and I'm like, oh, thanks for a new day. Thank you for a new day, you know, and I'm grateful to have a new day, to be able to breathe, to be able to see and all these other things. And so now I live in gratitude. My God is not a God of fear. My God is a God of love. And I want to be at peace and I want to love. And one thing that La Luz del Mundo always told us is good Christians are good citizens. And I'm going to call that bull crap, because good people are good citizens. Just because I'm out, I still work in my community. I still do things like I did before. I just recently got an award from the Blue Santa, and I was voted the best volunteer, most valuable volunteer for the Blue Santa, because I go out and help purchase the toys
for
our community. And I do things like that. But I'm not the Christian that I used to be. I'm not little cult Elisa anymore. I am now a new person. And when people start coming and trying to attack me about, oh, La Luz del Mundo, you used to do this. And I say, you're knocking at the wrong door, because I don't live at that house no more. This is a new person. And I'm no longer there.
Elise, may I ask you a personal question? Are you remarried?
I did remarry. Yes, sir. I did.
And you...
I was able to choose somebody and I love him so much. And
good for you. I'm very happy.
Something
for you.
I'm very grateful for, because I deserve it. And a lot of people might not understand that, but everything that I went through, I deserve to be taken care of. I deserve to be loved unconditionally. And that's how I feel now.
Good for you. Wow. It sounds from everything that you talked about and all the suppression that you went through and all the brainwashing, you sound like you're doing extremely well, that you seem to almost jump. This is just an expression. You jumped the line of deconstruction, like you did the fast track to get out of there.
I also listen to a lot of Stephen Hassan. I don't know if y'all know him.
Yes. Bite model.
Jaja. Also, I've had meetings with them. I've done a class with Stephen Hassan, because like my mental health, because I go back to the airplane thing. You need to put on the mask for yourself before you can help others. And I feel like that's what my calling is, to fix Elisa before I can fix somebody else. So if I can't do the work for me, I can't help nobody. And I have to be okay physically, mentally, emotionally, so that I can help others. And my goal is, in my state, in my area, is to get a grant so that people that are getting out of cults, any cults, it can be a biker cult, it can be Jehovah's Witness, whatever, La Luz del Mundo, can have therapy for 6 months because they need to deprogram. And there is no facilities, there is no type of help for that. When people get out, they need help. They need assistance. And the only way that we can do that is through deprogramming, is through getting the help. And if I can get that grant, it would help a lot of people. So I'm working on that too.
That's amazing. Amazing. And good for you living in joy and gratitude and no longer living in guilt and fear.
Yes. And I've experienced so many first. There was so many things taken away from me as a child. I used to love riding my bike in our little area. I used to love. But when I hit 13, I could no longer wear shorts or sweatpants or anything like that. I had to wear a long skirt. So the bike was taken away. I wasn't able to do that. But last year I went and I bought myself a bike.
Good
and
for you.
I get on my bike and I'm smiling. Everybody probably thinks this lady's crazy, but it's my inner child coming out. Like I hadn't ridden a bike in so long.
And then I'm riding my childhood.
Bike. And I'm so happy riding my bike. And these people probably think I'm crazy, but I'm a child and I'm experiencing a lot of new first. And I tell people I was like this worm. I was a worm because we're taught that too, that we're worse than the worms and we're a worm before God and all this stuff. So I was a worm, but I got into a cocoon and I couldn't look around and I couldn't see anything. But you know what? Now I'm a butterfly and I fly and I have colors and I have paint. I got a tattoo. I've experienced so many new things.
Yes, I see the tattoo on the inside of your arm. Very good.
For myself, freedom. I got my ears pierced. I wear pants.
Amazing.
So many things.
I love hearing that. I love hearing those kind of stories. I love hearing people during their deconstruction finding that much joy. It's awesome.
Okay. We have to wrap it up, but Melody has a final question that we always ask our guest at the end of the interview.
Do you have any advice for anybody who might be thinking or questioning a group that they're part of or that might be thinking about joining a group that is questionable?
I would tell everybody, if somebody tries to control you, if they tell you in this particular religion, we are the chosen ones, then you're in a cult. That's a cult.
Very good.
If they tell you that without an apostle or without this particular leader, you're going to hell, then you're in a cult. There's so many red flags and all you have to do is sit down and listen and you will hear the red flags. Listen to Stephen Hassan. Listen to Jaja. They help a lot. They really do.
Elise, tell us where we can find you on TikTok and any other social media that you'd like to promote. And of course, we'll put all this in the show notes.
Elisa Flores on TikTok. I'm Elisa Flores. On Facebook, I'm Elisa Flores. A lot of people say, why don't you change your name since you're out? And that's I tell them all the time, because my name is my name.
It's
I'm not
name.
That person.
That's your name.
That's my name. And I'm not going to change it for anybody. So
it's the new Elisa Flores. Elisa Flores.
Yeah.
Yes.
New and improved.
Elisa Flores 2.0. The new.
Yeah, the 2.0. Yeah.
Okay, thank Elisa, thank you so much for joining
You're
us.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Any other question, Melody, before we say goodbye?
No, I'm good. I just want to thank her again. It was amazing. Yeah. A great interview.
Thank you. We've You're been welcome. Trying to get somebody from La Luz del Mundo, and I'm happy that you speak English because everybody was speaking Spanish, which is fine, but we just can't have the podcast in Spanish yet. I'm learning, but we're not quite there yet. And then I don't have to teach Melody, so yada, yada, yada. So, thank you so much for joining us. And I
You're welcome.
Bless you, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.
For sure. Thank you.
Thank everybody who's going to watch this. I appreciate it.
What an awesome episode. We want to thank Elisa so much for coming on the episode. It was difficult for me to find somebody else that spoke English to speak out against La Luz del Mundo on TikTok, but I was so happy to find her. And just what a unique story too, her being part of that and not even realizing part of that inner circle and some of the stuff, the abusive stuff that was going on and not even figuring that out until years later when that all came out. That had to be a lot for her to deconstruct.
And to the point that, like in the podcast, we have multiple people coming from different, the same cult. So we've had, four or five JWs. We've had a couple of House of Yahweh. Everybody is going to have a different perspective, different experience. So we had Judith Castillo on, and she had a completely different story because she was married to Joaquin. But Elisa had, although Elisa was related to Joaquin, which was amazing, and she knew Judith, but a completely different story. 46 years of her life devoted to this cult. And I just can't imagine it. But I'm so happy for her that she's out, and wow, what a fast track to deconstruction on her. She's out 4 years and she's already speaking up against it. She's doing podcasts. She's doing the TikTok. So I
hats off.
Hats off. Thank you.
Yes, she's doing amazing. And if anybody is interested, anybody who's listening, if you haven't already listened to Judith's episode, That is episode number 20. I did look that up while we were waiting there. So episode number 20 is where you can find Judith's story. I thought it was sooner than that, but I remember we did have a hard time scheduling with her. There was a lot of scheduling conflicts there.
As a matter of fact, we did it once and it didn't work. And that's we had to do it again, I think. Right.
Yes. So. There was a bad connection and we had to re-record it. I do remember that now.
And to reiterate what Elisa said at the end, that she'll see if she can, I don't know, maybe we stop recording. She's going to try to find other people who speak English who were in the Lutheran window. But if you're in the audience and you were in the Lutheran window and you'd like to come on the show and talk about your experience, we'd love to hear it. So
yeah, reach out to us for sure.
Reach out to us. So.
So we want to thank Elisa once again for coming on the show, for sharing her story and being so open and honest with us. And of course, thank you to all of you for tuning into Cultimatum. Your support is always greatly appreciated. And if you enjoyed today's episode, if you could just take a moment to give us a rating or a review on platforms such as Apple and Spotify, it does really help us out. And don't forget to follow, share, and keep listening to all of our latest episodes.
And I'm going to just again, piggyback on that, please subscribe and follow our episodes. We're learning that Apple has changed how they present our podcast to people. So if you look for cults, it's much easier if you just follow, because if you follow and subscribe, you'll automatically get the next episode when it's released. So yeah, I'm looking into what Apple did, but Apple did something. And when they upgraded their podcast platform, they unsubscribed everybody. So if you're listening to the show, and that happened a couple of months ago. But if you're listening to the show and you were a subscriber, just double check that you're still subscribed. All right?
For sure.
And you can also connect with us by joining our Facebook group, Cultimatum Podcast, where we dive deeper into these important topics.
And you can also find us on additional social media platforms such as Instagram, Pinterest, TikTok, YouTube, and Threads.
If you have a personal experience with cults or human trafficking that you'd like to share, please reach out to us at cultimatumpodcast@gmail.com.
And if you are a cult survivor and looking for any additional support, you can consider joining the Cult Escape and Recovery Group on Facebook.
You can also check out my other podcast, the Anonymous Andrew Modern Dating Podcast. If you'd like to help us with the cost of maintaining the podcast, you can show your support through us to buy us a cup of coffee link in the show notes. And simply what that is, you click on it and you can make a one-time donation. And if you think that doesn't help, it does. You can donate $5, $10, and it would be greatly appreciated, because it does cost us to keep this podcast running. And we're coming up on a year, so please, we could use your help. Let's see, where are we? I think that's it.
Every bit helps. And I will say,
every bit helps.
And I will say, as always, stay safe, stay informed, and remember, you are not alone.